We Are SC podcast. Gary Paskowitz joined, as always, by Jeremy Hogue and Mike Lamb. And guys, one of the tougher losses in recent USC memory, to be up by 9 points, less than 3 minutes remaining, and to ultimately go down on a final play Hail Mary, that's hard to take. It was a game the Trojans probably should have won, a game they put themselves in position to win. But at the game, at the end of the game, in the final minutes, a series of events that all seemingly went the Sun Devils' way, and they go out of the Coliseum with the win. Before we get into our discussions, let's get an opening thought from each of you. Jeremy, go ahead and start us off.
My opening thought really is that, you know, as painful as the last 3 minutes of the game were to see things unfold, this is a game that throughout the game, USC had so many chances to win a few more battles here, a few more battles there, everything from penalties to drop passes to just some different plays that could have been made at different points of the game that would have made the last 3 minutes irrelevant. And then you get into the last 3 minutes, and at the end of the day, you look back and you say, you know what? We're now 3-2 as a football team, and in the two games that USC has lost, USC has been the better team on the field, but has not come away with the win. And that, you know, is obviously a very frustrating thing for all of Trojan Nation right now to digest.
My initial thought was, don't overreact to this. And the more I told myself not to overreact, I thought, wait a minute, no, don't underreact, right? You know, that's embarrassing the last 3 minutes of football as I can ever remember USC putting together. And I think embarrassing is the only way to describe it. To go back to what Jeremy was talking about, the fact that you played well, you did some things, you got better in certain areas, and then just not have a way to close it out and win games. And in this conference, the Pac-12, that's the way the games are going to go. You know, there's Hail Mary passes that have gone the way of Arizona against the University of Arizona. There have been Hail Marys that have happened against ASU and UCLA. I mean, it's just happened too many times. So if you're not prepared in those situations to make that happen, you're not going to win this conference. So it was disheartening, and I did not want to try to sugarcoat this thing and go, oh, it's going to be okay, they're going to be all right. It was bad. It was embarrassing.
Well, let's look at it and say, okay, if you guys are the head coach of the Trojans right now, and you are saying, okay, in both of those games, both of the losses so far, that there was a way for USC to get over the hump and come away with a victory, what are you trying to look at and say, what happened in those two games? What am I trying to focus on to turn that around?
You know, I really think that you have to look at it, and if you are the head coach of that football team right now, you've got to look at two different things. And one is you've got to look at your coaching staff and your preparation during the week and your game planning. And to me, Arizona State was not like Boston College. In Boston College, I felt like we were incredibly ill-prepared to face a run-option team, and the guys did not, especially defensively, did not execute. We, you know, allowed the big ground game that we allowed, and really got our butts handed to us against a team that should have never done that. You know, you look back at Saturday and you say, okay, was there a prepper? Well, you know, we faced the top rushing team in the conference, one of the best in the country, and we really shut down their running game defensively. We dominated the game for 3.5 quarters. We could have made some plays here or there, you know, drop balls, penalties, different things that happened. But, you know, USC really should have won that game. And there were mental breakdowns at the end of the game, especially in that secondary, whether it's the big pass play where Seymour goes for the pick and then the guy goes the distance, whether it's, you know, not defending the Hail Mary properly. You know, to me, you know, how we handled sort of the run-pass option on third down where we throw a little bubble screen as opposed to trying to really sort of run for a first down and keep moving the chains and get more aggressive. I do think as a coaching staff that this game was better than BC, but still I think you have to look at your coaching staff and your team and say, were we really prepared for the final stretches of a game like that to make sure that we set ourselves up for a victory? And I think you have to put, as Sarkisian has to take some of the blame on his staff and really put the onus on his guys, his coaching staff guys, to get his team prepared better. I think the team as a whole is playing better. I think, you know, all phases of the game, I think, are improving. Even the O-line is improving. But I think you have to tell yourself, we've got to take bigger strides, because it's only going to get tougher. That was a home game against ASU. We're going to go on the road against the top Arizona team. We're going to go on the road against Utah here shortly. We're going to have UCLA. We're going to have Notre Dame. It's only going to get harder if we don't continue to make big strides in how we prepare, how we perform, and how our guys are ready to make decisions in big situations. It's going to be more of the same, and I know nobody wants that.
If I was to say that the coaching staff looked lost in the last 3 minutes, would you guys argue with me? And that's what I saw, a group that was lost. And what happened defensively, I don't get it. You stop a team and they get 31 yards rushing, but you give up 500 yards in the air. To me, that's being a little bit too dogmatic in your approach. Like, we're going to stop the run. They're a rushing team, so we're going to do it. You've got to adjust on the fly. You've got to get these things done. And Jeremy, you talked about the Hail Mary and whether you were prepared for that or not. Clearly they weren't. Clearly they were in one coverage trying to get to another coverage. They don't have a timeout. And if I might, Jeremy, I'd like to take you back in time. I don't know if you will recall this or recall this person, but 1995, Stanford, USC at the Coliseum. Brad Otten's not very effective in the first part of the game. Kyle Walholtz comes into the second part of the game, brings the team back, but Stanford has a last-ditch effort. Do you recall this? Do you recall this at all, Jeremy?
I think I remember that play, yeah. a big guy wearing number three, is that what you're about to reference?
And Keyshawn Johnson, your teammate, went back to defend the Hail Mary, and he knocked it down. And one of the things that really stuck out in my mind, as prevalent as that play is starting to become in the Pac-12, you've got to figure out a way to defend it, and you've got to have somebody back there that understands to go up and get the ball at its peak and not to sit there and try to play center field. And, you know, believe me, I'm not pointing the finger at Hayes Pollard. I don't think that he should have been put in that situation, but I'm just trying to go back in time a little bit and reference this university and what it has done in the past. It's not like it's a mystery what you need to do on that play.
No, I'll just pick up on your point. I think it does go back to, you know, I feel like this team played so much better. It coached so much of a better game than they did against Boston College. So I don't want to compare the two, where I thought Boston College, we were absent as a coaching staff for the week. But you're exactly right, Mike. Those last 3 minutes, it's like, where did they go? What happened? And it's not those things, you know, it's not like those things happen on the fly. Those things happen during practice. They happen during training camp, where you prepare for those types of plays. You are preparing as an offense for two-minute drives, for drives that you are trying to eat the clock but still be aggressive and get first downs, and we didn't play that way in the game. And you're preparing for defending the two-minute drive and how you give up the big chunks of yardage as they move down the field. Getting first downs that kill the clock is beyond me with the deep, deep prevent we were playing. And then, you know, they set up for a Hail Mary and we're not ready to defend that either. Those things happen in training camp, and they were, you know, major breakdowns that cost us a game. And, you know, hey, we will see by the end of the year, but you certainly could, as you said, you know, Mike, don't underestimate how important and embarrassing this game was. You could easily see ourselves getting to the point at the end of the season where you look back at that game and say that kept us out of the Pac-12 championship.
Yeah, let me go back. I'm going to go back again to 1995. You guys came back, won that game. Keyshawn knocks it down. You win, and you guys go on to the Rose Bowl. So it is those moments that happen that put you in the position to play for a championship. So, no, don't understate. Don't underestimate how important this loss was on Saturday night.
Oh, you make an absolute good point. That one play, you think you tip that ball down. How much is the script flipped right now in terms of how this team is being perceived moving forward? You're going into what would have become the biggest game of the Pac-12 year so far on Saturday in Arizona. And not only was it that play, but you talk about game plays that could happen early in the game. There was one swing play in the second quarter when Darius Rogers dropped a pass that probably could have been a touchdown going in. USC ends up getting stopped on downs, did not choose to kick a field goal, turned the ball over, and right away a 77-yard touchdown pass to Jalen Strong. Those kind of plays early in the game, I thought that was a very key change of momentum right there.
Yeah, I mean, you could you talked about that one, Gary. You could talk about so many others where it was, you know, a play here, a play there. I even think about, you know, it's third and three late in the fourth quarter, and we are, you know, running the ball well at that point, sort of eating the clock, but going for first downs, and all of a sudden it's third and three. If we just even if we don't get the first down, we're technically in field goal range at that point. Instead, we run a bubble screen, we get a penalty, you know, we lose yards on the screen itself, then we get a penalty, we're out of field goal range, and then we try this, you know, the pooch punt because our snapper's down. I mean, just all the culmination of things that are happening. Just, you know, you sit in the stands watching this game, or you sit on TV watching this game, and you just, you look at it and you say, is everyone giving this game the respect it deserves to realize how important these things are? Where is our preparation? Where is our commitment on every down to make these things happen during the course of a game, as opposed to, you know, just taking something a little too lightly here and there during the course of a game, and the culmination of all those things ends up putting you in that situation at the end of the game where they're even able to throw a Hail Mary to go ahead. And, you know, it's just, it's not what we remember being, you know, Trojan football. And you can blame some of it on, hey, we've got a young team with young players that are you know, figuring it out and maturing before our eyes. But I think it's more than that right now. And I think, you know, Sark, you know, in my mind, needs to have a real come to Jesus with his coaching staff and his team to get the focus back on what it really means to play Trojan football in this conference, and the fact that things like what happened on Saturday don't happen at USC. And if you want to wear that uniform and take the pride of all the history and everything that that represents when you put that on, you got to take it more seriously every play during the game to win those battles all during the game so that it never even comes down to that at the end.
Gary, let me follow up with that, because I think what Jeremy just said is probably the most critical component to come out of this week. And self-examination has got to transpire with Coach Sarkisian, with his staff, and with the players. And when I saw Darius Rogers drop those footballs, I kept thinking to myself, Darius Rogers needs to look over at Nelson Aguilar and see what he's doing. You've got to start to model yourself after somebody that's pulling it together. And you wonder why a quarterback develops trust? It's because Aguilar will catch the ball, and he's not sure that you will catch the ball. If you're Zach Banner, you need to look over at Randall Telfair and see what he's doing. You need to go watch him in video, and you need to see the way that he is playing, and you need to model yourself after that. And if you're Kevon Seymour, you've got to go watch Sua Cravens. You've got to see the way that he has conducted himself. And it's not like the examples aren't there. It's not like some guys aren't getting it. They are. And Jeremy, you went through this when you played. There were guys that you looked at and said, wow, this guy's saying, let's go, let's do it. I've got to live up to his standards. I got to play like him. And for me, it was Ronnie Lott. And I looked at him like, what are you going to do? You going to let this guy down? And I think there are some players that are not taking it as seriously as you suggest, Jeremy.
Let's talk about a couple things that you mentioned, Mike, the things that hadn't happened before. This was one game, and you and I talked about this yesterday. USC had never allowed more than four touchdown passes in one game. Michael Bercovici threw five, the first time that has ever happened. When you look ahead to next week with Arizona and the passing attack that they're showing right now with a new Solomon and a very, very good group of wide receivers, I think as I'm looking to that game, that's one thing that I'm thinking, okay, how does that get turned around real quick? Because you had a guy throwing five on you for the first time, and you've got a very hot offense right now that you're going to be facing on Saturday.
Well, yeah, new Solomon to me is a player that I would be more afraid of than maybe anybody else in the Pac-12 right now. And this is going to sound weird, but Arizona runs Oregon's offense better than Oregon does. And you could see that last Thursday. They run that inside zone on you. You've got to try to stop that. And then a new Solomon can make it happen. And he's got, you know, a number of running backs, and not the least of which is Nick Wilson, who's just crazy good as a freshman. This is a daunting challenge for the Trojans defensively.
Yeah, I was about to say the exact same thing. I think this is potentially the most dangerous quarterback we face all year, and certainly if Mike Bercovici did what he did to us, again, a lot of that happening in the closing minutes, but still against a prevent, but still, you know, you look at what we a Trojan defense has trouble facing, and you sort of combine the best of, you know, Boston College and an Arizona State and all, you know, Anu Solomon is that guy, and he throws better. He has a better line in front of him. They're going to give us more of those option looks that we've got to be disciplined in how we defend. You know, I really think if you're, you know, Justin Wilcox and the Trojan defense right now, and you're Steve Sarkisian, and you're talking to our defensive coaching staff, I think you've got to get more aggressive at coming after these guys. You can't just sit back and have our cornerbacks and our safeties and our linebackers and everything try to defend everything, keep it all in front of you without going on the attack. And I think all of us, Mike and I included, I think thought we would see a more blitzing style out of this Trojan defense right now. The one thing that we're not doing defensively is we're not making disruptive plays. We're keeping guys when they hand the ball off to only getting a yard or two, and we're doing a good job defending the run. And, you know, we in early in the game, we're playing some pretty good coverage. When we get a little worn down late in the game, and all of a sudden we're getting creased. But we aren't seeing plays being made in the backfield, whether it's in the backfield on a tackle for a loss, or whether it's in the backfield getting sacks on the quarterback. You know, we've got to get more disruptive plays, and I don't know that we're going to get it with just our front four. We may have to do it with more blitzing in the backfield and force a team like Arizona to have to deal with that defensive pressure as opposed to just sort of picking their spots. Because I agree with Mike. I think if that happens, you know, we're in for a long day.
And then you flip it over on the offensive side of the ball. I thought the one thing that has been encouraging, and Jeremy, you and I exchanged texts on this in the second half, for the second game in a row, the Trojans stayed with the commitment to the run and put up good enough numbers in the second half. If they had come away with the win, I think you could have pointed to that as one of the main reasons. Second game in a row, they're closing out the game well. I think that's sending, obviously, a good message to this young offensive line about running the football.
Go ahead, Mike.
They're a work in progress, Gary, and yeah. I think that there is improvement, but the best thing I can say is they're a work in progress, and I really thought Zach Banner took a step backwards. I think this is a guy that must maintain his blocks, and if he does that, I think you're going to have some big plays happen, and that's what you want to work towards. If you can get to the fourth quarter and you can stay on somebody and stuff breaks open, which it did. You know, Buck Allen broke open that run, but then you needed it again, and it didn't happen. And Toa Lobanon, it continually tries to cut guys, and when he does, I think defensive linemen have seen that on film, and they know to get their hands down, and they're making plays. And in the last series, there was a big play, you know, made for a stuff to stall a run when you needed it. And I see some of these things, and whether they're habits or they haven't been addressed, or they're young guys that are trying to do things because they're physically overmatched, I don't know. But it is a work in progress. They have gotten better, but they're nowhere near where they need to be. Nowhere near where they need to be.
I feel like we're saying it week after week, and in terms of these guys are too young to really be playing right now. And I don't mean that negatively, because as Mike said, you know, they're getting better. They're probably light years ahead where I was as an 18-year-old kid trying to, you know, play at USC. So in no way am I, you know, I think overly criticizing them, but the path of an offensive lineman is to come into a program and spend a year working against the first team defense on scout team and get used to the speed and get used to the adjustments and the different things that you've got to do and get your conditioning and get your strength and all that sort of stuff, that we're basically taking guys and not letting them go through that process and throwing them in a game. And I feel like, you know, we're five games in. Mike and I sort of debated it at the very beginning of the season. Should we be rotating these guys, you know, all this sort of stuff? And maybe, hey, you run 90 plays at the end of the game, maybe they feel like they still need to do that. I'm going to actually sort of come over to Mike's side and say, at this point of the season, I can't imagine that the offensive line coaching staff and Sark himself doesn't feel like they really are starting to get a sense at who their best five linemen are, and try to sit there and say, you know what, we're going to keep these guys in the game and have them, you know, gel as a unit, really come together, and just go through an entire game as much as you can with those five guys. And I think at this point, during this next stretch of the season, you know, that might be what I would do. Now, that said, I don't think we've heard any indication that that's what they're going to do. But I think the biggest problem, and I think it's what Mike's really referring to, is the consistency. Is that, you know, they will be really good on plays, and you'll see that, and we'll explode for big rushing gains, and we'll give Cody Kessler lots of time or whatever it might be. But it is the inconsistency that's killing this group right now and really hurting our offense. And I think until that improves, we're going to be struggling to, you know, get enough points on the board to sort of keep us in some games. And that's a challenge. I mean, if it weren't for Nelson Aguilar's punt return in the game on Saturday, I mean, think about it. We go into that fourth quarter having 10 offensive points against an ASU defense that's given up a lot during the first half of the season or the first four games of the season. You know, we've got to get more offensive productivity for some of the games that come ahead, Arizona included.
Yeah, and let me just, you know, dovetail on Jeremy's point here. It's not the end of the world because Stanford has a young, inexperienced offensive line. UCLA does not have a great offensive line. Oregon's biggest problem is what? Their offensive line. Yeah, so it's not like, you know, you're the only team in the conference that has that issue. It's something that can be addressed, but I just wonder sometimes, are they a little bit too caught up, when I say they, the coaching staff, a little too caught up in having their guys that are freshmen, that, you know, our guys are going to play, when there might be somebody else that can come in and contribute and has played and done some things? You know, are you so caught up in the future and doing things your way that maybe you've overlooked something? And I don't know. I mean, that's me right now. That's conjecture on my part. But I look at all these young guys, and I see the mistakes they're made, and I see Buck Allen have to pay the price for it. And I don't appreciate that. You know, you're supposed to take care and promote your running back and not put him in that position.
Well, as we're looking at this moving forward, you're talking about the other teams, Mike, in the conference who are having their share of issues. Things are kind of wide open right now, and I think even with the loss on Saturday, the Trojans are not out of this thing at all in terms of the Pac-12 South. Let's kind of give your thoughts on where you see things right now in terms of the conference.
I think the one great thing you can say if you're Steve Sarkisian to try to get your team to sort of rebound from Saturday, and it's one thing for us to all sort of, you know, chime in as sort of analysts and say what we think about, you know, the USC football team right now. But if you're in that room and you're Steve Sarkisian, I mean, the number one thing you've got to do is get your team to move on. And yeah, you want to improve and you want to do the things we've talked about, but you've got to put that game behind you, and you've got to start looking to a really good Arizona team. We're going on the road at a night game. Tucson's going to be rocking. The top 10 team for the first time in a long time. They've been anywhere near this high in the rankings. You know, they're sniffing, you know, everything that they haven't even, you know, felt there in a long time. We got to go into that hostile environment, and if we go into that with any lingering things from ASU going on, you know, good luck. And to me, the best thing that you can have is Steve Sarkisian walking into that room on Sunday morning to meet with your guys is to embrace the chaos that is college football right now and the fact that, you know what, everybody in conference has a loss except for the team that you play Saturday. You go in there and beat them on Saturday, and you're tied for first in the Pac-12 South. And that you control your destiny from this point forward. You know, you've got to love that if you're in the position we're in. To be able to say that. But I think you're going to see more and more of this throughout the conference. I think the struggles along the offensive line at UCLA and Oregon, Stanford's struggles on offense, Utah is as great as it was for them to go in and beat UCLA. I mean, they lose to Washington State the week before. You know, there is inconsistency and great parity throughout the conference, and I think, you know, it may be a two-loss team in a tiebreaker scenario that ends up representing the South at the end of the day.
Guys, may I share with you who is leading the Pac-12 North? Cal. Cal is 2-1, and they're on top of that. Oregon State has lost. Stanford has a loss, and where did they come from? From USC. Jeremy pointed out, you're going to go play the only team that's undefeated in conference play, and if you beat them, you are totally in this thing. It's a different conference than everybody's used to. You know, you used to be able to kind of run away with it, and you had your easy outs. That doesn't exist anymore. This is much more like the SEC to me. You know, you've got two ends of the conference. You got a championship game. People are going to knock each other off. So if you, as a coaching staff, go in and say to your team, guys, look, we made a mistake. We will never, ever let that happen again. We will never be in a position to not be able to take a game away at the end. And then you go in and you beat Arizona, and now they're 2-1, and you're 3-1 in conference. All of a sudden, you're back on top of the Pac-12 South standing. So it all comes down to get over it, move on, figure out a way to beat Arizona, and everything's going to be great.
And I think what I'm hearing, Mike, when you're talking about, you know, Cal at the top, you hear Washington State and everything, the offensive play that's going on in this conference right now, as we're seeing more and more, it's as impressive as we were talking about at the beginning of the season, talking about the coaches that are in the conference right now.
Yeah.
We're seeing it in play through the first five games. These are some really terrific offenses.
Well, I had somebody ask me, who do you think is going to win the Pac-12 right now? I said, I have no idea. You don't. You know,
who knows?
Who knows? At the beginning of the season, it was like, okay, UCLA looks pretty good. Yeah. You know, I understand. They've got a guy that's a Heisman Trophy candidate as their quarterback. So, yeah, you would put there. Stanford, that's one of the usual suspects. Oregon, you know, you just can't do it right now. How do you handicap it? And it is the best conference top to bottom. And even Colorado right now, they're 0-3 in conference, but, you know, they're coming along. So, to me, there is no easy out. There's no way to sit there and think that you're out of it because you've lost a conference game. USC is lucky because they've got some other teams that are going to help them out along the way here. But it is as exciting as I have ever seen this conference, and I was watching it when it was the Pac-8. All right, so, you know, take it back. Jeremy, I watched when you were playing and when it was the Pac-10, and now it's the Pac-12. It is as exciting and good as football right now as I have ever seen in this conference.
The good news with that is that you aren't lacking for motivation because you're in it, right? And you're in it, and I think you're going to continue to be in it all the way down to the wire because teams, like you said, Mike, teams are going to continue to help each other out. You're going to have teams go into a week, and you think UCLA is going to win this game at home against Utah, and they don't. And, you know, and things like that are going to continue to happen, I think, through the course of the season. That's why I said it may be a team with two losses and a tiebreaker that ends up getting into the Pac-12 championship game. It wouldn't surprise me at all if that happens. But if you're USC, what does that mean? It means you're motivated, but it also means you can't be that team anymore. It happened to us on Saturday, but you can't have that happen again. You've got to take 1 week at a time, focus, game plan. Don't take anything for granted, like the drop passes and everything else that seemed to be happening to us. You've got to focus and win each game and find a way to take one at a time and move on. If you take anything for granted in this conference, you're going to walk out with an L.
And, Jeremy, the point that you made that I'll really take from this is I can't imagine there would be a better motivation in that locker room. You're sitting there. You're down after Saturday. But what you said, you can turn this around right away this coming Saturday and really put yourself right back in it. And that's a literal statement. That's a true statement. So if you're a player in that locker room, boy, that's got to be as good of an opportunity as you can have in your mind to clear away last Saturday and focus on this upcoming Saturday. I can't wait. I think it's going to be a terrific football game, and going to find out a lot about this Trojan team on Saturday in Tucson. So that's our report here for Jeremy Hogan, Mike Lamb. This is Gary Pasquitz. You're listening to the We Are SC podcast.